Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Every once in a while, we like to get a state of the church address from one of our favorite friends, someone who has been on this show a number of times. His name is Father Patrick Collins. Patrick Collins is a priest who lives in Douglas, Michigan, and currently works for Cross International. And he visits churches all around the country and encourages generosity and support for Catholic projects of charity all over the country and beyond. So we welcome once again to Common Threads, Father Patrick Collins. Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Fred. Thanks for inviting me again.
Certainly. So, you know, it's probably been close to a couple of years since the last time you've been here.
Mm-hmm.
And so much has happened in the Catholic Church between your last time and today. So let me start with this. As a Catholic priest, how do you look at the church today? What are you pleased with and what concerns you?
I'm very pleased with the leadership of Pope Francis and his pastoral approach, his experiential approach to discernment of particular situations rather than insisting some universal rule be automatically applied in every situation. That strikes me as more of what Jesus was up to and certainly more of what I've been up to in my 54 years as a priest, more of a pastoral approach. I'm very pleased with that. I know there's a lot of opposition to it from more conservative church leaders and people. But I think with this latest group of cardinals that he's appointed, he's pretty much assured the succession of himself and that his approach will survive his own demise or retirement, with the new cardinals probably electing somebody like him rather than someone not like him. So I find that encouraging.
Do me a favor, though. Let's piece out this term, pastoral approach.
Mm-hmm.
For the uninitiated, go into more detail. What does that mean from a leadership?
A pastor is a shepherd, someone whose primary concern is taking care of others, taking care of each sheep according to its unique needs. In fact, Pope Francis has come up with the phrase, he likes his priest to smell like the sheep, which is to be out there with the people and understand the people and their situations rather than just imposing some universal law or rule on every situation, whether it applies or not. We grow into the faith. We're not perfect when we start. And he seems to understand that and invites people to grow beyond where they are, but to accept people where they are. He wants to walk with them, as he says, encourage them. Accompany them. That's one of his favorite phrases, accompany people where they are. I think that's what pastoral means.
Now, I seem to recall that every once in a while I'll hear about some directive that is being debated or some directive that just already happens to be. And I know the way the church works is if I was to ask you, is X appropriate behavior, you would say, yes, it is, because the bishop of Grand Rapids says it is. But if we go to Chicago, X may not be appropriate because the bishop said no, right? Because am I correct, there are some things that the local bishops have control over,
right?
All right, and there are some things where if the Catholic Church or the Pope says this is the way it is, then that supersedes whatever the bishop says, right?
The Pope is the universal pastor, and all bishops are supposed to march, you know, with him.
Exactly.
But they also have a lot of latitude on certain issues in their own diocese to apply the universal message at the local level. They have that responsibility and that freedom. One area where bishops seem to differ these days is on the application of the ministry to LGBT people. Some bishops are much more open and welcoming and accepting of the situation and the people. Others are quite forbidding and judgmental and, sad to say, rather harsh with LGBT LGBT people. So that's an area where bishops will differ. But I think if they take their cue from Pope Francis, who just met with a gay person, interviewed him, and told him that God made him that way and don't worry about it, well, that seems to me to be a little different message than imposing a harsh, forbidding, firing people from jobs over being gay. So it seems to me some of the bishops are not listening too carefully to their leader.
Yet they still have that prerogative.
They do.
In the church structure, they can say, I choose to go my own way on this.
Mm-hmm.
Pope Francis's attitude, it reminds me of a gentleman who's been on this program several times before. He's Jewish, and he attends synagogues of a variety of stripes, Reform, Conservative, and even Hasidic, ultra-Orthodox.
Mm.
And he went to a Hasidic rabbi and said, look, I'm gay. Can I still attend? Do you have any issues with it? And he said that the rabbi was silent for a second and just then said, there are 613 commandments. So try to pay attention to the other 612.
Your other question was, where are things not going so well in the church? And that's probably going to take a lot longer to talk about than what's going well. I preach on weekends in parishes all over the United States, as you mentioned. Tomorrow, for example, I'll be preaching in Mississippi for the weekend. And the thing that is almost universal is rarely do you see anybody under 50 in church. There are some very happy exceptions where churches are busting at the seams with all families and young people, such as my best friend's pastorate in Traverse City, Michigan, St. Francis Parish. It's a very different experience going there. All ages, the church is full, families. But most places you go, you don't see young people at all. Young don't see families at all, young families. It's just us older people who still go to church. And that's a major concern for the future, because who's going to pay the bills? Who's going to keep the roof on in 10 years? When I look out at a congregation this weekend, I'll probably say in 10 years, there will only be about 5% of us still alive. And so who's going to pay the bills? That's a major concern for the institutional church.
Well, what does your colleague in Traverse City do differently than the people that you suspect you'll see in Mississippi? Have you been to this Mississippi church before?
No, I've never been there.
All right.
In Traverse City at St. Francis, Father Ken Stocknick has been pastor there for 14 years, and he's very pastoral. Everything I said about pastoral, Ken embodies and does extremely well, is much loved by the people. He's a very good preacher. He prepares his homilies well. The liturgies are superb. They're well-crafted. The music is very good. And there's just a spirit of welcome and acceptance of people there that's marvelous. Oftentimes, I'm afraid, in Catholic churches, there's a kind of an atmosphere of coldness. You come into the front door, you're not welcomed. Nobody speaks to you. You go to your seat to do your duty so you don't go to hell by missing Mass on Sunday. I mean, there's just that feeling of obedience and duty, and it's not very warm or human. Now, fortunately, I think we're getting better at being more welcoming, more hospitable. But that's not been the characterization of a Catholic liturgical experience over the last few years in too many places. But at Ken's Parish, it's the opposite. There are greeters out there at the beginning and the end. The priests stand out and greet the people. It's just a very pastoral, welcoming, warm, interactive, pay attention to the lay people community.
If I remember correctly, aren't priests transferred every few years from one parish to another?
That differs from diocese to diocese. There's no universal rule on that. When I grew up, pastors just stayed in place till they died when I was a young priest.
Really?
Yeah, they were very rarely ever transferred. They never retired. retirement came, and the older guys really didn't know what to do with themselves because they didn't imagine being retired. They were just supposed to stay on as pastors till they died. So that probably began about 1967 or 8 after Vatican II, where retirement came in. And then they began to develop a policy of 6-6. At the end of 6 years, you're evaluated, and the people evaluate you, the bishop evaluates, you evaluate as a pastor, how am I doing? And if everybody agrees, you can stay six more, but then you're out. But that's a norm, a rule, that each bishop can put in place. There's no universal law about
that. We were just talking about that, how different dioceses do different things.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. And then there are always exceptions. Let's suppose a guy's been in place for 12 years, but he's retiring in 2 years. Well, you're not going to move him to a new place to start over for his last 2 years. I mean, normally you wouldn't probably do that. So there have to be exceptions, even when you impose the 12-year policy.
The thing of it is, what's so challenging, so do you have any idea how long, realistically, your colleague Ken can stay in his church?
Well, that's a problem, because Ken has been involved in a $7 million building project there to build a family center, which they desperately need. They have 2,200 families, and the family center seats 150 people. So there's no place for the community to gather outside of the worship space. So he was actually sent there by a previous bishop, because he was known for being a good builder, to get this project going. $7 million is a lot of money. They're about $600,000 short of that. And the bishop had promised that he could stay until the project was finished. But then last summer, the bishop decided to impose the 12-year policy and told Father Ken he had to leave, which didn't please the parishioners or the building committee or Father Ken very much. And the bishop's been absolutely inflexible about that. So this end of August, Ken is out after 14 years, and the building project is not complete. The rectory part is in process now. They've laid the foundations, and it's going up. But the offices and the family center have to wait till all the money is in. That diocese has a policy: you can't build until you have all the money. Now, my diocese of Peoria, as I recall, has a policy of something like you have to have 75% in the bank before you can begin. But again, that's a decision of each bishop, how he applies the rules. But I think it's very unfortunate for the parish in Traverse City to lose the pastor in the middle of this unfinished project. It may never get finished now because of this, I'm afraid.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Father Patrick Collins. That is amazing, because I notice certainly, especially in Protestant churches, more so than Catholic churches. Now, this may not be as true as it was perhaps when you were growing up, but I seem to remember an understanding that Catholics would go to whatever their parish church was, no matter how much they disliked the priest. And they did their duty, they got their get-out-of-hell card free.
Right.
Every Sunday, come home, crank about what a boring sermon it was and whatnot, but nonetheless, they did their duty, and they weren't going to look anywhere.
Loyalty.
Very, very firm loyalty, absolutely. Now, Protestants, they tend, historically, to be a little bit more choosy about their pastors, and many of them, not all of them, depending on the denomination, they get to choose. They get to hire their pastors.
Well, I grew up in a church like that in Wyoming, Illinois, the Congregational Church. And during my growing up years, the people hired and fired four preachers and their wives. You know, somebody would dislike the drapes that the woman bought for the new parsonage. You know, some of them were sort of bizarre things, but the people totally owned the preacher. And the preacher was only free to preach what the people wanted to hear.
Right.
Down the street, Father Bratkowski at St. Dominic said, jump, and everybody jumped.
Yeah.
And so as a high school boy, I was more impressed with the orderliness of St. Dominic's than the chaos of the Congregational Church. Because if you didn't get the new preacher that you wanted, you might become a Methodist. So
exactly.
It was just very, very chaotic. So somewhere between tyranny and chaos, there needs to be common sense as to how the people can be listened to, and yet they don't own the priest or the preacher.
Exactly.
Somewhere in between. Now, we're working toward that as Catholics, I think. It's called consultative approach.
So whomever takes over Father Ken's position has tremendous shoes to fill, if what you say is true.
He does.
And he's not going to be easy to replace, possibly.
I would think not. Yeah, I wish the man well. I think it's going to be a real hard job because the people are not happy with the change. I hope the people will support and accept the new man so that the work that Ken did can be built upon and not just destroyed by people's anger and disappointment.
One of the things that we talked about last time, but we bring it up again because so much has changed since our last conversation about this, is, of course, the sexual abuse scandal.
Mm-hmm.
In the last couple of years, do you have any new insights?
I do.
Observations?
Well, I think finally the bishops are being called to task. Before, it was we priests who messed up, were thrown out in the street or something. But the bishop who passed us around and didn't tell what was going on, they continued to wear their pointy hats and were, you know, not held accountable. Now, particularly with Pope Francis and this situation in Chile, where all 34 bishops have resigned over their mishandling of sexual abuse, and they're waiting for the Pope to accept or not accept their resignation, bishops are finally being held accountable. Something like at the time of the Dallas Charter, which was the U.S. bishops' way of dealing with sexual abuse in 2002, at that time, it was documented that about two-thirds of the bishops were complicit in not properly reporting sexual abuse or passing priests around who were guilty of sexual abuse. About two-thirds of the bishops was documented in the Dallas Morning News in 2002. 5-6% maybe of priests were guilty of sexual abuse, according to studies since 2002. Well, that's that kind of shows that the bishops have been part of the problem because they've not been handling it properly. And hopefully now they'll be not only more responsible, but that they will be called to task and be out in the street themselves.
And I know that Pope Francis took some criticism over Chile because initially he did not believe what he was hearing.
Right. And then he apologized profoundly at his utter failure to deal properly with the Chile situation. And I have a feeling there are going to be more and more of those situations coming up as people feel free to come forward about bishops not handling the situation properly. They were just very self-protective of the institution. It would hush people up.
So do you think that enough safeguards have been put in place right now in parishes all over the country or all over the world? Have you been studying just exactly how the church is addressing that portion of it to make sure that it doesn't continue?
Well, my impression is that policies have been put in place that dioceses are supposed to implement. But I'm also get the impression that that's not all even, that some dioceses are not as respectful of what they're supposed to be doing as they should be. I've read that and I've heard that from people, some people involved in it.
That just sounds like a recipe for disaster.
It does. It does.
I can't fathom a bishop wanting to put his diocese in such jeopardy, to put children in jeopardy.
Well, I know one particular diocese, they just have not been reporting. They're supposed to report. There's an audit required every year of all this. And this one particular diocese has been rather selective in their auditing. I think they may soon be called to task, from what I hear.
Mm.
But you mentioned training and so on. I, yeah. I don't know what they do in seminaries these days to help people at the psychosexual level of maturation. When I grew up, it was almost totally ignored in the seminary. You were just said, if you're celibate, you don't have sex. That's the end of the story. Next question. There was no psychosexual training, you know, formation or anything about the...
No evaluation?
No. I mean, I think if you got in trouble, you'd be thrown out or criticized and said to shape up. But we were very poorly trained at that level. I'm sure that they're doing much better at that now. But I don't know what they're doing about the gay issue in the seminaries. The Pope has been just recently said something about he didn't want gay seminarians.
Surprised me.
Yeah, it did me too. Pope Benedict had said, you know, no gay seminarians. But then the seminary went on and continued receiving and ordaining gay people.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yeah.
After Pope Benedict said
yes.
that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But so I don't know really how the seminaries are dealing with that today. But because you're gay doesn't mean you're going to be a pedophile.
I'm sure Pope Francis, I guess he doesn't believe that, does he?
I wouldn't think so.
And just because you're gay doesn't mean you're not going to be celibate.
What was that?
Just because you are gay
doesn't mean you're not going to be celibate. No,
right.
No, not at all. So I don't know how they deal with all that. The underlying question, of course, for me has long been our particular Catholic teaching on human sexuality, which I think is, to put it kindly, incredible to most Catholic people. The rationale for the way people are meant to behave sexually is based more on biology than on relationality, and it's just not very, the natural law approach is not very persuasive to the modern mind. I think if you told Catholic people what it was, if they'd be surprised, many of them, to know what the teaching is. And if they do know what the teaching is, I suspect many of them simply ignore it in their own lives. And it stems back to the 1968 papal document on birth control, where Catholic people were beginning to practice birth control and expected the church was about to change the teaching. But because Pope Paul VI felt that the teaching on sexuality could not be changed, every act of marriage must be open to the transmission of new life, he could not change the teaching in his judgment. And I think Catholic people at that point began to make up their own minds and have only continued to do so until today. So I think at the core of all of our problems, this may be an exaggeration, but is an inadequate understanding of and teaching about human sexuality. You just name the problem, and chances are sex is at the core of the issue. Whether it's celibacy, sexual abuse, birth control, marriage and divorce, women priests, you name it, and somehow sex is tinged in with it in some way. And if I were the CEO of a major international corporation, the largest one in the world, as a matter of fact, the Catholic Church, and I saw six areas troubling my institution, and I discovered that they all had one thing in common, would I say you're not allowed to talk about it? I think we need to have a major conversation in the Catholic Church, ecumenically, interdisciplinary-wise, about the meaning of human sexuality. Because the sexual revolution of the 60s was not the answer. You know, we're still suffering from the chaos
excesses
of the 60s.
Yeah.
But neither was the rigidity of a lot of Christian teaching about sexuality. So we need to have a major professional, international, ecumenical, interdisciplinary study, a commission or something, to try to come up with something credible.
Well, are you...
I'm finished with that one. I'll probably be thrown out of the church now. I think I'm only reflecting what most priests and people think.
From what I gather, you are certainly not alone, not as a Catholic and not as a priest. I've had many conversations with people in the church about this. And while there certainly is an opposing viewpoint, I think there's enough of you out there to make it a legitimate a point for conversation.
I hope so.
Yeah. Father Collins, we're down to the wire for this edition of Common Threads, but we've got more questions to ask. So I hope that you'll join us next week.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella. My guest today has been Father Patrick Collins, and we will be back next week. Please join us here on WGVU.